Hi, everybody. My name's Hank Johnson. I'm an alcoholic. And it's really good to be here tonight. And I want to thank Clancy and Shirelli and whoever else is responsible for having me here. I know I have a nodding acquaintance with probably half of the people in this room. I got sober in Southern California in the Pacific Group. And I moved to Charlotte about almost 10 years ago. You know, you go where the work is. You know, my wife's job keeps her there. You know, I used to drink. I better throw that in right now. You might think I'm some kind of an imposter or something. You know, I drank a lot, you know, but for a long time. And you can tell, you know, I've been sober a long time. And you can tell by looking at me, I've been somewhere for a long time. But it's great to be here. I've been at this powwow once before. And it was wonderful then, and it's been a great one. This year, and I've been to every meeting today and heard all the speakers, and I'll tell you, they were all great, and everything has been wonderful right up until right now. But I'm going to fill in here and try to tell you my story. You know, people are talking about their parents and all the problems they had. Beverly, the Al-Anon speaker this morning and everything. You know, I was thinking when she was talking about that, I had wonderful parents, you know. And there was no little bit of drinking in the house. I had three brothers, and they all treated me good. I was the youngest, and they taught me how to play baseball, I had a wonderful family, you know. If you had a family like mine, you'd drink too, I'll tell you that. I went into a bar when I was 18 years old in Los Angeles, and I bought a suit of clothes, and I went in there and I ordered a drink. I wanted to look old, you know, and I ordered a drink, and they served me. You're supposed to be 21. I passed for 21. And the guy served me. Immediately I became a man. That's what I wanted to be, a man. And a man can buy a drink over a bar without being asked how old he is. Immediately I just felt wonderful. That I could, you know, finally accomplish something. I graduated right then and there. You know, sometimes you hear people talk about coming to AA, you know, in their very first meeting they came to, you know. They just felt like they came home. It was just wonderful. You know, not me, but I sure felt good in that bar, I'll tell you that. I felt welcome there, and I felt everything about that place was wonderful. And I could play the jukebox over in the corner just as good as the rest of the guys. In fact, I thought my selection of songs were a little better than most. I could sit at the bar and look in the mirror and get better looking after each drink. And I loved it. And I went back every opportunity I had from then on. And from then on, I drank. And I drank for 30 years. I was under the influence of alcohol for 30 years. I don't mean I was drunk all the time, but alcohol influenced everything that I did the next 30 years. I met my wife in a bar. Where else do you meet girls? And I should have been suspicious. She was drinking Coca-Cola. But we got married anyhow. We bought a little track house out in West Covina. The payments were $56 a month. no down payment, of course, and I had trouble making those payments. You know, I used my money to drink with. And those payments would come due on the first of the month, and I just didn't quite have the money. And so I figured, well, I'll just double up and pay two payments next month. Payments come due next month, and be two payments due plus a late charge. And I would just stiff all my other creditors and make the payment. And we almost lost that house several times, and we finally sold it and moved in with my father for free. If anybody would have asked me, Hank, what is your problem? I would have said, money. Money is my problem. This work I do, it just doesn't pay enough. I don't know how I got involved in this work. It just doesn't pay, you know. If she'd only go to work and help out, you know. But it turns out she already had she was pregnant. She'd already had a baby by a previous marriage. So she couldn't go to work. I didn't start saving for that baby until about a week before it was due. And I had to go to the beneficial finance company and borrow the money to pay for the hospital and medical expenses for that baby. My son's 48 years old now. He's got 27 years of sobriety. I kept a running tab with Beneficial for about 25 years. I couldn't get those people paid off. It's just like with the credit cards nowadays. I'd get them almost paid, and something would happen. I had a crisis in my life, you know, and I'd go and reconsolidate the loan, you know, tie up my sticks for another 2 years, you know, once I got sober, I was sober for a couple of years. I about 3 years. I finally got Beneficial paid off, and that was a big deal. You know, so money's my problem, you know. Our marriage was really a turbulent marriage. A lot of you folks out there knew her, she and I used to separate a lot. I'd come home from work and I'd be slightly intoxicated, and for some reason she would get angry and she'd kick me out of the house. And I didn't have any self-worth back in those days. You know, so instead of saying, wait a minute, I'm making the payments here, you know. This is my house as well as yours, but I'm making the payments. You know, without me, you don't have a house. That's what I should have said. But I just left. And I moved down the street, not very far away. And I worked myself back in. I was in and out, back and forth. She divorced me 3 times. And the last time she divorced me, I said, you know, I'm tired of playing these games with you. You want a divorce, you've got it. And, you know, with no more making up, this is it. And you can have everything. You can, by that time we had another house, I said, you can have everything. You can have the house, you can have the furniture, you can have everything except my old stack of 78 records. They're collector's items, and I want to keep those. She was glad to get rid of them and me. And I moved to Hermosa Beach, down an alley, Fourth Court, they called it. It was just an alley. And I moved into a garage, and they had made some living quarters. This landlady there, she was quite old, and she had made these living quarters for her kids when they were smaller. So I moved in. And she said, you know, the water is only about a block away from here. And I said, no kidding. Terrific. You know, and I thought to myself, I'm going to get up every morning at 6 o'clock and I'm going to run 5 miles along the ocean edge. And I'll really get in shape. And when I get through running the 5 miles, I'll plunge into the ocean and I'll body surf some of those waves. And man, I'll feel good. Yeah. And as far as I know, the water was down there. I never really got around to checking it out. I was going to, you know. I only lived there 4 years. I was getting ready to check it out. You know, I have, a lot of people in AA have dual problems, you know. They're alcoholics and they're drug addicts. And they're alcoholics and overeaters. They're alcoholics and this, they're alcoholics and that. I'm an alcoholic and a procrastinator. I always figure if a thing's worth doing, it's worth waiting until tomorrow to even consider doing. And as a result, I postponed about 30 years of my life. You know, decisions have to be made. They must be made. But if you don't make them, somebody else is going to make them for you. And that's the way I lived. And I used to bitch and moan about the decisions. You know, you can't blame it on me. And so this last time we got divorced, I moved into this place. And it was like a room about, I don't know, 10 by 15 or something like that is what it really was. And had a little kitchen and a bathroom. And I bought a turntable and 10 speakers from a friend of mine. And I had speakers in all four corners, behind the drapes, behind the couch, in the bathroom, in the kitchen. You name it, I had a speaker there. And a typical day for me back then was to wake up 10 o'clock in the morning. I'm already an hour late to work. Oh, man. I'd throw my clothes on, get in that car, weave in and out of traffic. I had to get there. You see, I should have worked yesterday. And I left all those papers all over my desk. I had papers on top of my desk and in my desk drawer. Some of those papers were months old. They were too old to turn in. You know, if I turned them in, I'd be fired for holding them so long. If I didn't turn them in, I was going to be fired. Today was going to be the day. I knew it. My job is over. And that's the last bit of respectability I had, was my job. If it wasn't for that job, I'd be on the street. And they had my name on one of the business cards there. And that's who I was. And so I didn't want to lose my job. And so I was really afraid I was going to be fired, and I'd get to work and check everything out, and everything appeared to be the same. And I'd get a cup of coffee, and I'd shuffle papers and make excuses to my customers. They'd want to know where their stuff was, and I didn't have the guts enough to tell them it was in my bottom drawer. But so I'd make excuses. And I'm one of the originators of the computer excuse. We've all heard it, you know. Computer's been down for the last 6 days. As soon as it gets running again, I'll get a printout and I'll call you and we'll get this thing straightened out, you know. Now, I used that excuse before we even had a computer in our office. But a respectable time to go to lunch at 11:30 or so, I'd go out to lunch to the bar that was conveniently located right next door to where I worked. And they sold martinis over there, and I like martinis. And they sold double martinis for $1. The regular ones were 75 cents, but during the noon hour, you could get a double for $1. Who ever heard of having one martini? You're going to have two anyhow, so you might as well order the dollar one. You'll save 50 cents. God knows you need the money, but And I'd have my dollar martini, and I'd get to checking my drink against the guy sitting at the bar with, and he'd have a 75 center, and I'd say to myself, who do they think they're kidding? This isn't really a double. It's a little larger than a 75 center, that's all. So I better have another one. And then I'd have another one, then I'd have another one, then I'd have another one. And I'd call the office and tell them, I forgot to tell you, I'm going on a lot of calls this afternoon, take messages, I'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. And then I'd head towards the beach and buy the cheapest bottle of vodka I could find, whatever was on sale that day. And that's what I bought. And I'd get home about 2, 2:30, and I'd change into my pajamas, and I'd sit on the edge of the bed, and it'd be like 2:30 in the afternoon. And I'd put one of those old 78 records on the turntable, you know. I'd say to myself, you know, this, you've done it again today. This cannot continue. You're not the only guy that's ever been divorced. You're not the only guy that's ever been in debt. Why don't you do something about it? All you do is sit around and talk about stuff. You never take any action on anything. Then I'd put one of those old records on the turntable. Something like Billy Eckstein singing, Who Can I Turn To? Then I'd go into my fantasy about starting tomorrow. It's all going to be different. Starting tomorrow, I'm going to get up at 6 o'clock. I'm going to get down to that damn office by 7. I'm going to knock out paperwork for a couple of hours. When that phone starts ringing tomorrow, 9 o'clock, I'm going to be ready to do business, and starting tomorrow, a whole new life is going to open up for me. Starting tomorrow, it's every waking moment I'm going to be earning money. I'm in sales. I don't have to work at special hours. I can work all as long as I want to. I can work Saturday and Sunday even, and that's what I'm going to do starting tomorrow. In fact, I'm going to put a big red X on the calendar, and I'm going to work 365 days in a row, starting tomorrow. Starting tomorrow, I'm not even going to drink. Man, what a terrific idea. You know, sometimes I amaze myself. I come up with these problem-solving ideas, you know, and that's it. Yeah. And I got to get to thinking about it, thinking, you know, at the end, I could just picture it. At the end of 365 days, you know, all my bills will be paid. I'll have a new car paid for. In fact, I'll even buy her a car. I'll buy her a white Lincoln Continental. And I'll drive up to that house where she still lives. I'll stop at the Hallmark card shop and get a beautiful card, one of those real sentimental poetry on it. I'll write on the side of the card, "Thanks for all the good years, H." You know, not Henry, not Hank, H. And then I'll get a gold-plated key for that automobile. And I'll put the key in the envelope with the card, and I'll drive it up to that house, and I'll turn down the cul-de-sac and make a U-turn and coast right up into the front of that house. And I'll tiptoe up on the steps, and I'll put that card down the mail slot. And then I'll split. Next morning, she'll get her mail, and she'll see this envelope with no name on it or anything. So naturally, she'll open that first. And the key will drop out. I wonder what that key is. Then she'll read the card, and the card was, you know, this real sentimental poetry, this real sticky sentimental, and and she'll read it, and it'll just be excruciatingly painful for her. Tears will just roll down her cheeks. And then she'll check that key out. She'll wonder what the keys are for. She'll kind of look out in front of the house, and there'll be that white Lincoln Continental out there, you know, all shiny, brand new. And then she'll put it together that that's her car. And then she'll be sorry, by God. And I don't know about you, but I just love to buy those expensive gifts. And, then I'd realize I was almost out of booze. And it's 10:45. My God, where has this day gone? I can't believe it. Can't believe that it's 10:45. I'd call the operator and check, 10:45. Jeez. You know, and then I was almost out of booze. The liquor store closed at 11. And so I'd throw my clothes on over my pajamas, and I'd run 2 blocks to the liquor store. I had to get there by 11. That's when I first started jogging about that time. And I'd get there just as they were closing up. And I'd buy the Smirnoffs. I always bought the better brands right around where I lived. I wouldn't want anybody to think I was cheap right there in the neighborhood, you know. And I could stroll back to my shack with peace and contentment and security for the rest of the night. Start rehearsing the speech I was going to have to give, because I knew I was going to be salesman of the year. Somewhere in there, I'd pass out. And I'd wake up the next morning, it'd be 10 o'clock. I'm already an hour late to work. Get in that car and weave in and out. I had to get there. You know, and check everything out. Everything seemed to be the same. And I'd go to the bar that was conveniently located right next door to where I worked. I'd go over there and make my big decision of the day, whether to have the dollar one or the 75-cent one. And then I'd have another one, then I'd have another one, then I'd have another one. And then I'd call them and tell them, you know, I forgot to tell you, I'm going to a lot of calls, take messages. And I'd get home about 2 or 2:30 and change into my pajamas and sit on the edge of the bed. And I'd think, well, happened again today. This cannot continue. You know, you're not the only guy that's ever been divorced. You're not the only guy that's ever been in debt. Why the hell don't you do something about it? All you do is sit around and talk about stuff. You never take any action on anything. Then I take a big jolt out of that cheap vodka, you know, and put an old record on the turntable. Something like Billy Eckstine singing, "Who Can I Turn To?" And then I'd go into my fantasy about starting tomorrow. It's all going to be different. You know, I didn't do that once or twice. I did that hundreds of times. You know, you hear such exciting stories from the podium sometimes. These guys, my God, some of the stuff that they've done, you know. That's all I did. That's it. I used to watch a lot of TV. And I used to listen to Johnny Carson and all that. I understood all the inside jokes. Everything. Then I got sober and I didn't understand anything they were talking about. But my son went to a Christmas party. He was 16 years old, and they served him some liquor, and he got so drunk that he couldn't stand up, and they took him home to his mother's. And she took one look at him and pulled him out of the back seat of that car and threw him in the house and pushed him into his bedroom and threw his wingtips in after him. And she called me and said, come and get your drunken son. He's just like you are. And that's another time where I should have said, well, wait a minute. Now, we're divorced. You won him in the settlement, you know. You know. Now he's not, I can't help it if he's not behaving himself. Don't call me. That's what I should have said. But I said, okay, come and get him. And I went and got him and brought him back down to the beach. And you know, funny thing, that's the start of a beautiful relationship that we've still got going to this day. And we really clicked it off. I got a little bit responsible and didn't drink as much and cooked dinner for him and helped him with his homework and everything. And things were going pretty good. And his mother came down and checked us out one time and saw how good we were doing. And she said, you know, maybe we were a little hasty, you know. Maybe what we ought to do is sell that house and pay off all those bills. And we'll all live here temporarily. And so we turned the garage part of the garage house into a bedroom, you know, and slept out there in the garage. And all three of us lived there. Things were bad before she moved in. But no, you know, not at nearly as bad as it was gonna be, because during that two or three years we were divorced, she had started drinking. And you know, some people see, I used to say I drank, you know, I didn't become an alcoholic till I was about 20 years into my drinking, which is nonsense. I was an alcoholic when they served me that drink at the bar, but I got away with it quite a bit. I never got in any trouble with the law, and I hadn't kept my job and all that stuff. But she was one of these, you know, some people, they start drinking and immediately they start getting in trouble. You know, and they have fist fights and every damn thing else. And she was one. She was that type of a drinker. And we never ever had a good time drinking together, ever. And we're, you know, and a typical night back then was, you know, I'd get home early and change into my pajamas and play some of those old records and fantasize about tomorrow. And here comes my son home from school. It'll be about 3 o'clock, about 2:30 in the afternoon, something like that. And I'd ask him, you know, I says, who do you think you're kidding? School doesn't even get out till 3. You're already home at 2:30. You know, you've ditched class, you know, or maybe all day, I don't know. And I would stand there in my pajamas with a bottle of vodka in my hand, and I'd ask him, how the hell do you ever expect to amount to anything? Yeah. You know, if you don't apply yourself in this world, my son, you don't have a chance. And I'm really worried about you. And he'd look at me funny, you know. And I always had 3 or 4 guys with him, and they all looked at me funny. And then they went out surfing or whatever they were doing. And then my wife would come home about 5:30 or something, and I'd have martinis ready. And I'd had about 10 already, you know, and her first one. And as I was finishing my 10th, she was finishing her first. And as she was finishing her first, she went into a blackout. You know, I never heard about blackouts until I came into AA, you know. But I just thought she was flipping out or something. But she'd take a drink, and by the time she was finished that first drink, her whole personality changed. And I'm not here really to take her inventory, but I mean, a lot of you people knew her, and I'm going to tell you just a few of the things she did. It'll help you understand my case a little bit. But she did stuff like throw the Christmas tree, lights and all, out the back door. And I don't know if there's any music lovers out there or not, but I'd play a song, you know, the song would be 25, 30 years old. And, geez, what a great song. And I'd play it again. And I'd play it one more time. And then again, it's just to drive her crazy. You know? And she'd walk over to the turntable and pick that record up and, "Don't break that record, it's a collector's item." Bang. Never have to hear that damn thing again. And that's the way we live. Only it was a lot worse, really. And she, you know, she'd wake up and be in a coffee shop up in Malibu and not even know how she got there, you know, in the middle of the night. She was just not a good drinker. You know, some people should just not drink. And she was one of those people. And I used to lecture her about it, you know. Then we went back to group therapy, and we'd been going to group therapy off and on for 15 years trying to figure out what the hell was wrong. This last one was a couples workshop. They're great. I don't know if you've ever been to a couples workshop or not, but, you know, that's where married couples have been storing up evidence all week. And they tell everybody about it. And why don't you tell them how you drank a fifth of vodka before I even came home from work last night? Yeah. Well, why don't you tell them about the fifth you drank, you know? And we just, God, we come out of those sessions and my guts were on fire. I just couldn't wait to get a drink, you know. And this therapist said, "Do you really drink as much as she says?" I says, "Yes, I do. I drink a lot. Who wouldn't?" You know? You know what I said? The thing that really gripes me is that they've never missed a meal. They've always had a decent place to live. They've always had medical care. They've always had clothes, everything. They've always had it. And I haven't deprived them of anything. So I drink. So what? I'm injuring my health a little bit, perhaps, but that's worth the price to pay. And he said, "Have you ever thought about quitting?" I said, "Yes, I have. As a matter of fact, I'm going to quit starting tomorrow." And he said, "Have you ever thought of going to AA?" And I said, "Thanks, but no thanks. I've already been to AA." And I had gone to a meeting a couple of years prior to that. And it was in Manhattan Beach, at the Manhattan Beach Clubhouse. And I went there, and they were given chips at the beginning of the meeting. The leaders asked if there's anyone that just finished their first 30 days of sobriety. If so, come up and get a chip and tell us how you did it. And so this guy come running up and got his chip. "My name's Joe Blow. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm really proud to get this chip. And I know this is a spiritual program that I found God when I walked through the doors of AA. And it's the lights in the eyes of the people that just turn me on and keep me coming back to these meetings. And I just love everybody. And just before I came to the meeting tonight, I got a call from my employer, and he's made me general manager down at the plant. And I just can't begin to tell you what a wonderful thing this AA is. And for all you newcomers, keep coming back. We love you. Anyone else just finished their first 30 days? Here comes this little lady running up. You know, got her chip. My name's Mary Smith, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm really proud to get this chip. And I know this is a spiritual program that I found God when I walked through the doors of AA. And it's the lights in the eyes of the people that just turn me on, keep me coming back to these meetings. And a short time ago when my children looked my way, they had a look of fear in their eyes. Now when our eyes meet, there's a look of respect. And I've noticed lately that my husband is looking at me with renewed interest. I just can't begin to tell you what a wonderful life I'm living now that I've joined AA. And my children were all failing in school. Now we're getting letters from all the major universities throughout the United States offering free scholarships. And it's just wonderful. And I wake up in the morning and I reach over and grab the hand of God and we walk through the day, hand in hand. And for all you newcomers, keep coming back. We love you. And I thought, my God, what have I got myself involved in here? I wasn't able to stay for the whole meeting that night. I needed a drink. And I went and got one or 20, you know. So I told this therapist that I wasn't interested in AA, some kind of a spiritual program or kind of a religious cult of some kind. It's okay by me if they want to go to it. It's nothing I'd be interested in. And so he put me in touch with a doctor that was going to give me some antabuse. I agreed to that. And so I was told not to drink for at least 48 hours prior to going to the doctor's office appointment. That's the first thing he wanted to know. Is it true that you haven't had a drink for 48 hours prior to coming here? I said, that's right. I don't know how I did that. But he says, well, you don't need antabuse. He says, if you can go 48 hours, two full days without a drink, you're over the hump. And you need never take another drink as long as you live if you don't want to. It's up to you. Scared the hell out of me. I wanted to quit, but I wasn't quite prepared to quit that long. And he went on and on and on about alcoholism. And he said that people that have the disease of alcoholism have character defects. They refuse to work on their character defects. Instead of coping with their problems, they drink tonight instead. They wake up the next morning and they still got all their problems, only now they got a hangover on top of it. And the guy was telling my story to me. I just didn't recognize it at the time. And he went on and on and on about alcoholism. So I says, well, doctor, if you're not going to give me antabuse, then I guess I better go. How much do I owe you? And he said, I can see I'm not making much of an impression on you, so I'm going to tell you something. He said, I don't generally tell my patients this, but he says, I'm going to share something with you. He says, my wife's an alcoholic. We've tried everything known to medical science for her. And she goes to the hospital and stays for 30 days or more. and gets out. She hadn't had a drink, and within a week or so, she's drinking again. And she's done this over and over again. But she's sober now. She goes to AA, and she's got 7 months. And so I said, well, wonderful, something like, you know. And so he says, promise me that you go by the Manhattan Beach Clubhouse and buy the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and get a meeting schedule and start going to some meetings and to get out of there. And he said, there'll be no charge for this appointment. And that's the only thing that guy said that day that impressed me at all. And I went home and threw the book on my dresser and had another drink. And shortly after that, my wife made a suicide attempt, and it was a serious one. And she came out of a blackout, and she had destroyed this little place that we lived in. And neither my son or me were there that night. And she turned the gas on in the kitchen oven and tried to kill herself. And she woke up the next morning and, you know, failed again. And she had been with me when I went to that doctor, and she had heard all of what the doctor had said. So she went back to him and asked him if he thought she was an alcoholic. And he said he didn't know, but why didn't she go to some meetings with his wife? She'd be happy to take her. And that's the reason I'm standing up here tonight, because she went to AA. And I thought it was really, I couldn't believe she was going to AA. You know, she didn't drink 1/10, 1/20 as much as I did. You know, and there she was going to go to AA. And she came back and she said, they said it doesn't matter how much you drank. I'm an alcoholic, she said, you know. And we had a big argument about that. But to be a good guy, I went to meetings with her. And as a result, I visited AA for damn near a year. And people would say, well, are you Lou's husband? And at the meetings, I said, I'm Lou's husband. Well, are you an alcoholic too? No, I'm not an alcoholic too. She's one. Work on her. I'm a visitor. And so, I finally decided, you know, that I'm going to quit drinking. And I did. I quit drinking a little bit before Thanksgiving. And I lasted clear through Christmas. And the Saturday night after Christmas, I was sitting there. She was off to a meeting somewhere. I'm sitting there and I'm thinking about, you know, well, I've gone about 40 days without a drink. Went clear through Christmas. The drinking is part of the year. Maybe you're not an alcoholic after all. And so I went to the liquor store and I bought a half a pint of vodka. And I no sooner got it back to the house than I drank it practically straight down. And what did I buy a half pint for? I went and got a fifth. And I drank all Saturday night and all day Sunday and closed the bar up at 2 a.m. And woke up the next morning. It was 10 o'clock and I'm already an hour late to work. But I went to work because you have to go to work on the Monday after a big holiday. If you don't, they know you're an alcoholic. I learned that right here in AA. So I went to work. But I went over to the bar a little early that day because I was sick, really sick. I poured all that alcohol into my system all at once, you know, after just 40 days. And God, I was sick. So I went over to the bar a little early that day. And I ordered a glass of medicine, Bloody Mary. You know, it's not a social drink of any kind. It's medicine. And I, guy made this big, tall Bloody Mary for me, and I drank it straight down. And, whew, man, it hit you know, it hit bottom. Geez, make me another one. And I looked down, I'd spilled half of it all over my tie. And so I went to the restroom and cleaned the tomato juice off my tie. And I came back, and the bartender said, "Did you want another Bloody Mary, or did you want a martini?" And I said, "I'd just skip it." And I went over to the coffee shop section of that bar, had a sandwich and a glass of milk, and I haven't had a drink since. And that was December the 29th, 1969. It's been a little over 30 years now. And I don't know. You know, I listen to Clancy talk about that getting kicked out of the midnight mission and walking all those blocks to the clubhouse, and that guy told him to sleep it off in the stock room. And he never had another drink. And it's really amazing. You know, we never seem to take our last drink when we mean to, you know. I promise myself every day, sorry, tomorrow I wouldn't drink. And so AA has been a wonderful adventure. I'm kind of a guy that I can't get out of my tracks. I just soon sit around and watch TV and watch the ball game instead of playing in the ball game and stuff like that. The AA members have absolutely forced me into action. And there I was, 48 years old, playing baseball, for God's sake. When I was in the Navy at 21, I was too old to play baseball when I was in the Navy. But I started doing the things. I got a sponsor. I got Clancy as a sponsor. And he had a few suggestions for me. He said that, you know, I had a big long laundry list of complaints about her that I wanted him to fix. And I had a lot of problems. And he says, you know, that's not the way this thing works. He says, I'm sure, he says, those are real problems. And I'm not putting them down, I'm not saying, but he says, forget those problems for now. And he started going to AA, get involved in AA. He says, and I'll guarantee you, by the time you've got, that time you do these steps, that most of those problems will be gone. And those that are still with you will be manageable. And you know, that's really been true for me. My wife got, try to wrap this thing up. My wife got sick. She had 11 years. We both had the same amount of time. And had 11 years of sobriety. And she came to my office and told me that she had cancer, lung cancer. And she had 3 months to live. And so I didn't take that news very graciously. You know, it was an inconvenience for me for her to be sick. And I went to my meeting that night. I lived up on the desert then, and went to my meeting that night, because I've been taught that if it's meeting night, you go to your meeting regardless of how you're feeling. You feel good, fine. You feel bad, fine. You go anyhow. So I went to my meeting. And driving over to that meeting, I kind of was beating myself up. You know, I said, yeah, you haven't really worked these steps. You know, if you'd worked these steps, you'd be feeling better right now. You know? And you're just paying lip service to AA. You're really not doing AA. And so I went to that meeting. It was not a special meeting or anything, but at the end of the meeting, they read, and they read it at a lot of meetings, and we read it at the meeting we started in Charlotte on page 164. It says, ask in your morning meditation what you can do for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. Then it goes on, obviously you can't transmit something you haven't got. But I heard that, you know, I heard that. And I said, yeah, by God, that's right. Our house is in order. I had long since paid off all those bills I had. We owned two houses, or we were paying on two houses, and we were doing pretty damn good, you know. And when I walked out of that meeting, I knew I was going to be able to be of some help to her. And I did, and I was some help to her. And she lived for 5 years before she passed away. And when she died, it was right after her 16th birthday. And it was a pitiful thing that she had to go. And you know, she really was a good person. And I class myself as a good person, too. But we just were so dependent on one another that we... Just when, you know, she blamed me for, if it was raining, I had to take the blame for it, you know, and stuff like that. And so we were just so dependent on one another that we couldn't operate. So anyway, we had long since solved most of those problems. And when she passed away, I felt sad that she died, of course, but I was proud that she was the mother of my children. Our son that used to look at me so funny back in those days, turns out the reason he was looking at me so funny is that he was stoned out of his gourd. And he turned himself into AA when he was 21 years old. This coming Friday, I'm going up to Santa Barbara and help him celebrate his 27th birthday, AA birthday. And he's a successful man. It amazes me. He's a successful businessman. And he makes quite a bit of money, and he lives up on a hill, plateau, overlooking Santa Barbara. He can see the ocean from his house. And he's really doing well. And they just made him vice president of the company he works for. I can't believe it. So when she passed away, you hear so many people when their spouse passes away, they just fall apart because they have unfinished business. Lou and I were current in all our affairs. And everything that needed to be said had long been said and dealt with. While I was sorry she passed away, at least I didn't have any guilt. I don't have to say, geez, if only I would have said this. If only I would have done that. You know, if only. I don't have to say that because I did it. AA and pulled me back into the world of the living. And I went to extra meetings and stuff. And 3 or 4 months went by. And I don't know how many months went by, really. But a respectable amount of time went by. I started looking at the ladies again. I'd get home and I'd say, why didn't you ask that gal for a date? And I'd say to myself, well, what makes you think she'd go out with you? And then I'd say, well, why wouldn't she? And I'd have this argument with myself. Well, call her. You got her phone number. And I'd call her. Would you like to go out Saturday night? Sure. Oh, my God. What the hell am I going to do now? I don't know anything about relationships. I've been married all my life. But, But you know, all those feelings I had when I was 16, 17, 18 years old, all those feelings of inadequacy and clumsiness and you know, all those feelings came back to me. And I remembered why I drank in the first place. I was asked to speak in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I went there, and it turns out that a gal had submitted my tape for the committee's approval. And this woman, got sober in Waukesha, Wisconsin. And a guy from the Pacific Group that Clancy sponsored, Bob A., and I think he's here tonight, and he went back home to Waukesha, Wisconsin, and started a group. And it was kind of patterned after the Pacific Group. And so I was asked to come up to Wisconsin and talk, and I, to substitute for Chuck C. when he was sick, you know. And that's kind of a tough assignment, you know. And there were 1,200 people waiting in having a big anniversary breakfast there in Madison, Wisconsin. And then they made the announcement that Chuck couldn't make it. We got Hank J. from Marina Del Rey in his place. And they all went, who? And anyway, she got the tape and submitted it. And I went, and then several years went by. She had moved back down to Charlotte and got divorced and all that stuff. And so we started talking at the convention. And I said, if I ever pass by this way again, I'm going to call you. We'll go out to dinner. And she said, that'll be fine. And so I was pretty close one time, about 1,200 miles away. And so I called her, and we went out to dinner. One thing led to another, and I moved back to Charlotte, and we got married. And we've been married for about 6.5 years now, and we've been on a great adventure together. She's got 18 years of sobriety. And we've been to Paris, we've been to London, we've been all over the place, and we've just had a wonderful time together, and it's been a great, great adventure. So she wasn't able to come this weekend because she's busy being a grandmother. Her daughter just had a son, so she'd rather be there than AA. So I want to thank all of you for allowing me to talk here tonight, and it's wonderful to see all you people that I've known and been acquainted with for years, and all I can say positively for sure about AA is I'm not a student, I'm an action man, and all I can say about AA is that I found out this is a spiritual program. And I know that I found God when I walked through the doors of AA. And it's the lights in the eyes of the people that turn me on and keep me coming back. Thank you very much.